This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Lynch's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck was that?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck, yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think it might be a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. PTB Nation. Let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Sunday evening, Memorial Day weekend. Smash your night earlier than usual. Of course, with me, as always, is my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you doing?
Good evening, JR. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you, and happy Memorial Day weekend to everyone at Place to Be Nation in the United States of America.
And as always, this episode is dedicated to all those who... paid the price to give us this freedom to sit here and do this podcast tonight. So why don't we do a quick moment of silence? What do you say?
Let's do it.
So that is a memoriam for those. And again, thank you, of course, always to all active and non-active service people as well.
I learned something interesting today, JR. By the way, welcome. It is episode 373 of the Place to Be podcast. I learned something very interesting today from a guy, a gentleman that... goes to my church. Tell me this morning, he goes, did you know that there's a difference? Like, everybody just says, like, everyone thinks Memorial Day and Veterans Day are pretty much the same holiday. And he says, that's not true. You actually hit the nail on the head. Memorial Day is for the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Veterans Day is for the living.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think that. A lot of people just, all right, for all the veterans. And No.
That's why it's a memorial.
Yeah. Duh. Very weird.
Anyway,
good weekend so far. Yesterday was fantastic.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was okay.
No, it was good. We had a good time at the Rotella annual Memorial Day weekend, summer kickoff cookout barbecue kind of thing. We brought the crew down and had a good time. Had some nice weather, some good food.
Yep.
Sucked down a bratwurst. That was good.
Yes, it was delicious. He's got to start wearing a hat, though.
Yeah. There's a little back brace.
Sunburned beanie that he had on.
Anyway, it's always good to see Rotella. And then this weekend is a big weekend. You'll be in town.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, I shall.
Seeing you again here. So, but yeah, we are here tonight talking wrestling, like we usually like to do. And we're, of course, motivating our way through, as Dusty Rose once says, motivating our way through the year 2004.
Yes. And tonight, it's more like, it's not really wrestling. It's like, nothing at all. Are you in the parade? Any parades tomorrow?
He's the float, I believe.
Yeah, I think he's being sad. I think he's got people on top of him. You were saying wrestling earlier, JR, but where we are tonight, it's more like wrestling-y, kind of like Stephen Graham, our fellow fine Canadian participants here on Place to Be Nation. Wrestling-y. Because arriving where we are tonight, the killer of legends. In a world where... tonight...
Stephen Graham would be like, it's only 1.5 stars, eh?
Eh? Not like Billy Legal 99. All right, tonight on the Place to Be podcast, Inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you SummerSlam 2004.
The event you never thought you'd see.
Yeah, one of those weird shows, JR, that people are like, this is another one of those ones where you probably might need to watch again, because it's one of those ones where at the time you may not have liked it, and then it's as the years go on, you just kind of adopt that opinion even if you've never seen it. Oh, yeah, somebody told me it sucked, so I'm not going to bother.
This was the weird DVD, wasn't it, that printed a bunch of copies with like there's no audio in the main event or something like that?
Yes.
One of us, was you or me that had that? It might have been mine, actually.
I think it's yours. I played mine the other day, and it's fine. It must have been yours. But you weren't the only one. There was a goozle of people. Yeah. Yes, that where right around when the bell rings, and then like 2 minutes into the match, there is no audio for the rest of the show. So
very odd.
Quite unlucky.
By the way, you know it's summer here in my town because the fireworks are being lit. I know it's a holiday weekend, I guess, so I'll let it slide. And it's actually early, 8:30. Usually in the summer, it's like every night at 11, some assholes lighting up fireworks.
1 o'clock in the fucking morning. Yeah, here where I am, it's usually later. Yeah, it's like 1:30, even during the week. August 15th, 2004. Live from the Air Canada Center in Toronto, Ontario. The third pay-per-view in the city of Toronto. Mm-hmm. The first non-WrestleMania.
Mm.
Which means, JR, we debut a new building tonight. Because obviously, the previous events in this city were WrestleMania 6, mm-hmm. your personal favorites, and mine. And WrestleMania 18, of course, those were both at Sky Dome. So we are in a new building. Then, of course, go back to the awesome house shows at Maple Leaf Gardens with Billy Red Lions and Gorilla, you know, half in the bag, doing Rene Goulet matches. But not tonight. New building tonight, JR. Tell us about it.
The Air Canada Center opened in February 19th, 1999. 13,000 parking spaces available.
Wow.
Holds 19,800 for basketball with at least 20,511 counting standing room. 2,270 with standing room for hockey. 18,819 for lacrosse. 19,800 for concerts. 5,200 for theater. Let's see here. The architect, Brisbane Brook Benyon Architects, in case you're interested there. Four residents, the Toronto Maple Leafs, played mm-hmm. there since it opened. Yep. Toronto Raptors of the NBA, played there since it's opened. The Toronto Rock of the NLL.
The Rock.
Been there since 01, still going strong. And the Toronto Phantoms of the AFL, played there for a year, 01 to 02.
There was an arena football team in Canada? No idea. Never knew that. Interesting. Yep. Your attendance... 17,640, so not quite a sellout, but with the set and everything, take some seats away. Your buy rate, 0.94, pretty good. And on commentary tonight, two tables out in the boondocks, mm-hmm. Out in the water there. Your Raw announcers, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. And at ringside, it is the voices of the Blue Brand, Michael Cole and Taz. I keep like waiting for the Raw table to finally, because I'm not going to keep asking you, JR, still where the Raw table moves? No. It's good. It's, what, probably another year, I would think?
Yeah. What do you think, because the commentary now has finally been real stable for a while.
Yes.
Now that the, you know, obviously it happened when the split occurred, but now that we're past all the commentator wars of 03, it's really mm-hmm. been about a year, almost, mm-hmm. since right. we've been real settled in on the commentary. Do you feel like it's really... Both teams have kind of settled into how they are, and it adds to the identity of both programs. And do you feel like now you really identify? It's JBL Cole, I mean Taz Cole and King JR, and that's it. And, you know, locked in. We're good to go, and we're moving forward this way.
Yeah, their chemistry and their the way they go about calling a match suits the two shows. JR and King are very animated. They're very, you know, they have a lot of, you know, colorful adjectives, but most of the matches, you know, kind of need them to lean on because, you know, some mid-card is a little shaky. SmackDown, and I kind of noticed it on this show, you know, Cole and Taz are not completely face heel. You know, Taz usually is... Taz usually just acts like a heel to be a douche to Cole. He doesn't even believe it all the time. But he's good like that.
You can maybe argue he's, you know, the closest to Jesse that we've had so far in that he really just has his favorites and roots for them, whether they're face or heels. So, you know, if there's somebody he likes, somebody he hates, if he hates you, like Al Wilson or, you know, some of the others, then he's all over them.
Yeah.
If he likes you, then he'll put you over hard. And he's just good at getting the psychology and the story across. And like you said, he's a ball buster to the lead guy. So it's good. It's just good over the last year to have seen we finally settle down and just keep the announcers in the booth and not have all this nonsense going on. So, all right, we got the Sutton notes here. Do you remember the tagline to the SummerSlam?
Was something Olympic. Olympic Games, I think, something like that.
The Games Begin, of course. The Games Begin. Because it said the Olympic theme with those really cool vignettes with everyone competing in the different Olympic events.
Yes.
Build up.
Yep.
Do you remember the song? I'm sure you do, since you're a big mock.
I remember vaguely hearing it at one point.
Oh, my God. Come on. It's your fucking homeboys.
Who? Well, I have a lot of them. What? Captain and Tennille? No.
Summertime Blues by Rush.
Oh, Rush. That's right. Summertime Blues. That's right, because that album came out. That's right.
Sponsor. Do you remember the sponsor?
I was going to say Castrol, but I think that's... I think I'm 10 years too early. I think Castrol is the SummerSlam 94.
No, Domino's was SummerSlam 94.
Oh,
remember
is it
Domino's
Castrol?
Did the Undertaker. No, it is not Castrol. It is Stacker 2's YJ Stinger.
Oh, okay.
Where is Castrol? 04
that must be King of the Ring.
94 is definitely Domino's because they sponsored the whole Leslie Nielsen freaking Undertaker thing.
Oh, okay.
Eating the Domino's by the pool.
That's right. Yeah.
Sports featured on the poster were powerlifting, the balance beam, table tennis, high jump, fencing, and parallel bars, which you are the master of.
Okay.
All right.
Yes, I am. Yes. What's our Sutton report?
Well, I'm in it right now. I'm deep inside the Sutton report. Well inside. James Kenna is banging a hammer on the wall as we shoot. All right. Here are your champions. World champion Chris Benoit, WWE champion John Bradshaw Layfield, your Intercontinental champion is Edge, United States champion, we have a new one, and that is Booker T.
What?
Won the vacated title by surviving an 8-man elimination match that also featured such luminaries as Billy Gunn, Charlie Haas, John Cena, Luther Reigns, Kenzo Suzuki, Rene Dupree, and Rob Van Dam on 729 from the U.S. Bank Arena. And we'll cover more about that in a few minutes. Tag team champions are not on the show, but they are still La Resistance. WWE tag team champions are new. We have Billy Kidman and all of his fleas teaming with Paul London. They defeated the Dudley Boys on the 7-8 SmackDown in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. Spike Dudley is your new Cruiserweight champion. We'll get a lot into him in a few minutes.
Yes.
And he defeated Rey Mysterio on 729 in Cincinnati. And Trish Stratus, still your women's champion. We also have a new SmackDown general manager, Scott.
Yes.
Named on 729 in Cincinnati as well. And that is Teddy Long. Replaces Kurt Angle, who we'll talk about as a return to active duty.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Teddy? I remember being pretty excited. And I remember dating back, you know, as far as earlier in the year when his stable kind of petered out and looking for something to do. Like, he always seemed like he'd be a good fit as an authority figure on, you know, the more gentle face side, which SmackDown seemed to favor anyway back in the Steph days.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember liking the choice immediately. I thought he was a good fit, and he slides right into the role. And he's so familiar in the role, because obviously he'll be in it forever. He's so familiar with the role that when he pops up later with Bischoff, it didn't even hit me that it was his first show, because I'm so used to seeing him come in as the SmackDown GM that it took me a minute to realize this was the first time. But SmackDown, you know, we'll talk about it because Bischoff mentions it, but SmackDown has had a lot of upheaval in the GM world. So they've only been, you know, its own brand with GMs for about 2 years now, and we're already on, our fourth one? Because it was Stephanie, Heyman, Kurt, and now Teddy.
In fact, Bischoff makes a point in that promo that you were just mentioning about that.
So what did you think? You like Teddy?
I love Teddy a lot. I think SmackDown needed stability in that character role.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt needed to wrestle. Enough was enough now.
Well,
so,
he's hurt. I mean,
it's – well, that's
what do you want to do?
But his leg was – that broken leg was fake. No.
Jesus.
Enough
is enough with your broken neck that you already wrestled
with. Your broken
through.
Neck. God, enough of this. You said you wrestled with it, for God's sakes. No. It was good to finally – to be able to have a stable person in that role. Bischoff had been pretty locked in on Raw, and Raw kind of had that darker, more heel-tinged feel to it anyway. SmackDown was kind of like the happier wrestling-based still, and I think the – I think having kind of a baby face, kind of a harmless baby face.
Well, it made sense too. Because you didn't want heels dominating both shows. I mean, the heel GM thing is already, you know, played out enough, and now to have that force over both shows was starting to be a little bit much. So I think it was good to get the face balance, and it opens up the dueling again between the shows now.
Right,
a little testier. So, the Diva Search, Scott, launched on July 15th. Casting special shown on USA. 10 women were chosen to see who would be the Diva Search winner. Women who made the cut, and a lot of these names you're going to remember and know, and we'll talk about them later in their segment. But all jokes aside, and the Diva Search was a joke, the butt of many jokes in 2004, the butt of much anger. A lot of these women ended up having a little bit of an impact. Like, it's not a bad mix of women here. So, Amy Weber, age 27. Carmella DeCesare, age 26, of course, best known for being the, was it, girlfriend
of Jeff Garcia.
Carmille Anderson, age 26. Chandra Costello, age 28. Christy Hemme, age 23. Joy Giovanni, age 26. Julia Costello, age 28. Maria Kanellis, age 22,
ooh,
and Tracy Wright, aged 24. Before this show, we had two eliminated, and that was Julia and Chandra Costello, who I believe are sisters. Same age. I'm guessing they were twins. But they're gone now, so we'll see ya. So the remaining eight pop up here later in the night. Released from the company due to budget cuts, Sakota, of course, formerly one of Tajiri's running buddies, had 54 matches, 4-18 on TV. Sable is also released. We talked about her quite a bit at the Bash. She had 7 matches. She was 3-2 in her return. Scott Steiner agreed to a release with the company. 120 matches, 26-23. So actually not bad.
Yeah.
A guy that came in with a lot of promise, a lot of ballyhoo.
Oh yeah.
Hit
a lot of money.
Bottom quickly.
Yes.
And I thought rebounded towards the end of 03 into 04, and then he got hurt, and then just set him out of here.
Yeah.
Not obviously did not come anywhere near what they hoped, but
no,
you know, he had his moments. TV by the numbers, Raw passed 585 episodes, SmackDown 261, Heat 311, Velocity 116, and we're past 110 weekly TNA pay per views and 11 Impact episodes. March down to the final one. International Heat, Rosie defeated Steven Richards. Maven beat Chuck Palumbo. Rodney Mack beat Val Venus, and that rhymes with
Venus.
Yes. SummerSlam Heat, Rob Van Dam slumming it, defeated Rene Dupree.
That's terrible.
Falling quite a ways.
Yes.
And a little bit of history of Ring of Honor for those real wrestling fans out there. On A7, at Testing the Limit, Jay Briscoe pinned Low Ki in a tag team match. It was the first time since the ROH All-Star Extravaganza 02. Also on the same show, Havana Pitbulls became the 10th ROH Tag Champions, defeated CM Punk and Colt Cabana. Ooh. Austin Aries defeated Bryan Danielson in a best-of-three match. It lasted 75 minutes.
Who the hell are all these guys?
I don't know.
Never even heard of them. We'll bunch of skinny little
again.
Nothings.
We'll see if they ever show up again.
Yeah, probably not.
On 8/28 at Steel Cage Melee, John Walters, heard of him before, became the third ever ROH Pure Wrestling Champion, defeated Doug Williams and Jack Evans, and won the first ever Steel Cage Melee match. So, there you go. John
okay.
W. The Angry Republican. All right. Why don't we dive into the show?
The other one. All right, let's get started. We got a little six-man tag action to get the show started.
Rumble action.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have got a pair of champions. And the new champions that you mentioned in the roll call there, the new Cruiserweight champion, Spike Dudley, and his brothers taking on the former Cruiserweight champion and your current Blue Brand tag team champions, Mr. London and Mr. Kidman. How did we get here, JR?
On July 1st, JBL announced he'd be defending his belt against the Dudley in the main event of the show. Excitement quickly turned to anger for Bubba and Devon when JBL said he'd be facing Spike. Later that night, Bubba and Devon told Spike not to mess his chance up and that they would help him if he wanted it, but he wanted to go it alone. That strategy backfired as JBL won the match. On 7/8, things got worse as the Dudleys lost their tag titles to London and Kidman. And on 7/18, after 2 weeks of telling his brothers to leave him alone, Devon ignored Spike's wishes and helped him with a tag match. On 7/22, Spike became the number one contender for the Cruiserweight title. Bubba and Devon congratulated their brother, promised him they wouldn't interfere. If he didn't interfere in Devon's match with his buddy Rey Mysterio, Spike would keep his word and Mysterio pinned Devon. The next week, Spike pinned Mysterio to win the title after his brothers interfered. Spike was angry and apologized to Ray for what went down. But later that night, Ray would help London and Kidman beat the Dudleys to retain. A week later, Spike finally gave in to his brother's pressure. Bubba and Devon defeated Ray and Spike after the match. Spike hit Ray with a low blow, and the Dudleys celebrated as a family. The next week, the United Dudleys beat down London, Kidman, and Ray to set up this great six-man showdown. And, of course, this would kick off, Scott, which was one of SmackDown's best, you know, parts of the fall here.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite gimmicks is the boss Spike heel turn.
Yes.
So he becomes this, like, angry little midget guy, and he starts to let his goatee grow, and he becomes a real asshole, and he starts becoming the boss of the family. So Bubba and Devon basically just listen to whatever he says, and he bosses him around, and yells at everyone. And, you know, it was a good different slant on the Cruiserweight title, which has just kind of been floating a bit here, and just on, you know, traded between Ray and Chavo.
Mm-hmm.
It was good because Spike, on the surface, seems a bit played out, and it was surprising to see him win the Cruiserweight title from Ray.
Right.
But with this turn, made him really fresh, and I think it makes the Dudleys as a whole fresh again. Do you agree?
You know, at first, I remember when I first put this on the network and realized this six-man tag, I had said, whoa, I thought these guys were gone by now. But, yeah, I think the dynamic of now them being minions, even though they were just minions a few months earlier, they were, you know, Paul Heyman's minions. But I think the dynamic of Spike being this different kind of character and the guys kind of going along his path, I think was very good. And I think it livened him up a little bit. I was pumped about seeing Kidman and London as tag team champions. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a neat combination. I've always been a Kidman guy.
Oh, yeah, with
or without fleas.
I like, too, that they went... You know, they went all in. They got the matching tights, and they really became
yes.
a solid unit, which was very good. Very good use of both guys. A perfect fit. I think we talked about this with Kidman earlier a couple shows ago, how, you know, they broke up the team with him and Ray, and it seemed like that'd be something that was a good fit for him. So I was pretty excited to see him in this role as well.
Do you think Ray was kind of forgotten?
No, he was still being spotlighted. We talked about that, I think, at the Bash. I mean, he had that long match with Chavo, Cruiserweight champion, and he's on the show here more than people could say.
I feel like almost, like, even though Spike is the main cog here, I feel like Kidman in London against the Dudley seems to have suddenly highlighted the middle of the match, and Ray kind of got lost in the shuffle, but maybe he didn't.
Hey, but on the show, it's more than guys like RVD.
RVD had to play, you know, on the undercard show or whatever. So
London and Kidman, a great new team, good use of both. Like we said, really added to the tag division. Really fresh opener for SmackDown too. Six guys that were used this way really helped support what had become a shaky undercard. So I think we're off to a good start as far as SmackDown is concerned. London gets a hot start, flying around, frustrates Devon. Bubba Ray interferes in the apron, turns a tide. I thought Spike was fantastic here, calling the shots as the asshole. Dudley's wear down London. He's able to trip them up and slip free for a hot tag. Ray comes in, picks up a near fall on Spike with a springboard leg drop. Match breaks down with all six brawling. Good London and Kidman teamwork. Bubba and Devon clear it out to the floor, and London hits a nice springboard somersault senton onto Bubba. Nice teamwork from Ray and Kidman, calling back to their old team. And Kidman hits the shooting star press on Spike, but Devon breaks up the pin. Car wreck on the floor. Ray misses a dive, and Devon crushes London with a clothesline. We get a 3D on Kidman, and Spike covers for the win. I thought this was a very good opener. It was a crisp pace. I thought they could have won even, you know, another 10 minutes if they wanted to with these guys. Spike winning, I thought, was the absolute right move. Keep building his dickhead heel persona. I like that the Dudleys hit the move, but Bob and Devon hit the move, but he gets the win. And I thought it was a cool, old-school kind of six-man, SummerSlam six-man.
That's an interesting analogy. I agree with you 100% after saying that this did seem like a SummerSlam. It almost had that Heart Foundation Brainbusters feel, like just a good combination of guys to open
or
a show.
Like the Rockers one with the Rockers and Tito against Martel and the Rougeaux.
Yeah, I'll use that as a better analogy.
Yeah, six solid guys and going out there at a quick sprint and the heels steal the win. So I really like this match a lot. I enjoyed it as an opener.
I did too.
One of the better matches on the night, I thought.
Yes, I agree. The crowd didn't get all weirded out yet. They were pretty hot. Spike got some good heel heat.
Mm.
As we're going to watch through the rest of 04, and he's defending this belt, I feel like what a career turner for Spike. I mean, he was really getting lost in the shuffle.
It was the last time he was even on pay-per-view. I mean, when they were doing the... Probably about a year ago, right, when they did the stuff with La Rez. I mean, I don't know if he even made the pay-per-view. I know he got powerbombed through the freaking table and, like, smashed his head or whatever. Was he at Summer? Did they do a six man in SummerSlam 3, or was that a tag? I mean, it was Unforgiven. Whatever. There was some match where he was in there, but I don't think he's been on since. So maybe at the Rumble, but he he's a guy. Was he even in the Cruiserweight Open at WrestleMania?
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think he was.
So he really has been out of the picture. And yes, I agree. This is a career, because it was shocking. I remember everyone being really surprised when he won, when he beat Ray, because they hadn't started the angle yet, the boss stuff yet. So it was really pretty surprising when he won the title that night. It was kind of like, Spike, really?
No, it was just a tag. It was that opened SummerSlam.
I think he comes out at the end.
Yeah. It was La Rez defeats the Dudleys to retain the titles. So it's just the two of them. It was just the pair. But he was probably out with them.
Yeah, he comes out, or he interferes at the end and gets his rub back or whatever after almost getting paralyzed on that.
Yes.
On that table. But yeah, no, I thought it was good. It was a surprising turn and definitely a career saver. And it ends up, you know, they've really, here's your thought. I mean, I think they've completely overhauled the SmackDown undercard, like with just these six guys alone.
Well, they definitely freshened up. They definitely freshened up the tag division with Kidman and London. Spike, the Cruiser's kind of fired up a little bit now, and he gave the Dudleys a stay of creative execution. I mean, at the Bash they were just so flat, and they were ready. They were ready to just be gone, and. And maybe they were, I mean, they're not like top of the line again, but I do feel they're at least slightly more relevant, a little more, you know, in the game than they were like even 3 months earlier, 2 months earlier. So big creative switch there on SmackDown, and a very smart move. You have a bolster in the tag division. You now have a new cool heel cruiserweight champion, and the Dudleys kind of a stay of execution in the company from being booted, because things have been, you know, they were really flat in the spring getting out of WrestleMania.
Yep.
And now they've kind of got rejuvenated. So I really like this match too. Taz and Cole off to a fast start. Mm-hmm. They were really on their game. I kind of like when they start the dual shows. Do you get that feeling? They're better off because they're a little crisper. They usually have the faster matches. I always feel like it's better on the combo shows for them to start, you know?
Well, it could be worse. We could have, you know, Rodney Mack and Kristen Whiskey. Dudley's doing much better than
they were a year ago. Yes, that's true, too. So there you go. The boss and his minions, his big brothers, the Dudley family. You sit and wait for the Dudley family. They get the win over the tag team champions and Rey Mysterio, the number one contender for the Cruiserweight title. And we'll see how long Spike can hold the belt after the big turn. All right, next up. It's gotta be Kane! It is indeed. And the storyline just gets lamer and lamer. these two met at Vengeance 1 month earlier. Kane losing to Matt Hardy. And, of course, we're involved in this whole, you know, Days of Our Lives thing bring it to our good Place to Be Nation fans, 90210-ish kind of thing with Lita. But for some reason, the story did not end at Vengeance, JR, did it?
No, it got a little more interesting. So on 8-2, Kane accosted Lita backstage, offered her the following deal. He would face Matt Hardy at SummerSlam, and Lita would have to marry the winner. Lita welcomed the opportunity to be done with Kane once and for all and accepted the offer. A week later, Lita told Matt that the doctor confirmed the baby belonged to Kane. Later that night, both men signed the contract for the pay-per-view match, and the segment ended with Matt tipping a table over on Kane and smacking him with a briefcase. The next week, the heel Divas threw Lita a mock bridal shower, giving her insulting gifts. That night, Matt cost Kane a title match against Edge in the final salvo before this went down. Okay, so this thing has gotten much more absurd. The baby is officially Kane's, of course, not a surprise. And Lita has to marry the winner, which is so stupid on many levels when you start entering these, you know, social contracts and wrestling matches. I thought Hardy's been made to look like a real loser. Because even if he went, first of all, Lita, I mean, to be done with Kane, she has to marry the winner, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what makes her think that Kane's going to be done with her even if Hardy wins? And doesn't she want to marry Hardy? So just marry Hardy. Well, like, what is the problem?
I know.
Like, why do you even have to enter in to offer, you know, marry Kane? It's not like Hardy's going to die if she marries him and Kane. I don't know. The whole thing just doesn't make sense to me.
Yes. It's funny because just when you thought this was the most foolish domestic storyline in the history of wrestling, we have another one year later at SummerSlam. That one involves children, not married couples.
We'll get there. But I mean, this one here,
it's just ridiculous.
It's confounding to me that, like, just marry the fucking guy you want to marry. Like, what is the problem? Like,
yeah,
even put it on the line? Like, there's no one saying you can't marry Matt if you don't win the match. Like, if there was some rule in place that she had to win, you know, Matt had to win a match to actually marry her, then I get it. But I don't know. They should have done, like, 30 days thing. Like, she has to spend 30 days with Kane or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess they kind of did that already with to save Matt, but.
Yeah.
And he just looks like an idiot. I mean,
he's
got to win a match to marry supposedly the woman that loves him. And even if she does, he's going to have to raise his demonic baby of Kane. I don't know. The whole thing is
It's
such a pointless stipulation.
It's so stupid.
It really is pointless.
It absolutely is stupid.
I think Hardy just looks like a fucking tool in all this.
He does. He looks like an absolute toolbox.
So aggressive start to the match. It feels more urgent than a vengeance, which makes sense, obviously, since now they're just trying to steal a win to win Lita's hand in marriage, because God forbid we can't get married unless we win this match. Hardy controls completely early until Kane whacks him with a clothesline. Kane taunts Lita as he beats on Matt Hardy. Hardy dumps him to the floor, dives out after him, and I thought he looked good and focused here. Hits a twist of fate on the floor. Lita gives Matt the bell, which he uses for a near fall. When the ref is distracted, we go back and forth from there. Hardy crotches Kane on the top rope, but Kane chokeslams him off the top to win the match. I thought it was a good finisher, but they didn't really build hot to the finish. Just kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I thought it needed maybe a hotter Matt near fall where he almost gets the win or almost takes the loss. Lita has to marry Kane now, meaning the storyline will continue, and Hardy just looks like a completely emasculated loser. His woman got knocked up by this guy, and now he couldn't even win a match to save her from having to marry him, and I think he just looks like a pussy.
Yeah, he does.
And I still don't get why they would even put this on the line. It didn't make sense.
No.
There's no... Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
He just looks like a pussy.
I'm trying to figure it out.
I know. The chokeslam off the corner was actually pretty kind of a cool visual, but
what would have made more sense is if Lita like had signed some contract or made some agreement that she wasn't aware of, and in that contract said she had to marry Kane, and Kane said he would break the contract if Hardy could beat him, like something like that would make more sense, where there's a reason for them to have that match and put it on the line. Like, right now, there's no reason why, Kane was part of it, that Kane vowed not to beat up Matt anymore. I mean, would you believe him? He said that before, too. It made no sense to me.
Maybe it's the whole prospect of this baby that kind of throws the thing into some type
of... Just marry who you want to marry, though. I mean, to me, there's nothing forcing her either way, so there's no point to it being on the line.
Well, the fact that it's Kane's baby probably makes kind of a codicil.
Just marry Kane, whatever. Like, just marry the guy you want to marry. Like,
marry somebody and cut the crap.
Well, there's no reason. There's nothing on the. There's no nothing forcing her to put marriage on the line. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why
right.
put it on the line for no reason? Like, unless Kane said, "I'm going to stab Matt Hardy in the face if you marry him, so you need to have this match. And if he wins, I'll leave you alone." Like, it makes no sense. There's nothing on the line.
Right.
There's no contract tying her to Kane. I mean, if you want to be with the father of the baby, then just marry him. And I'm looking at it way too much, but it's really annoying. The
contract of conception.
Logic gap. Unless we're missing something in our build where Kane
vowed.
I don't
think so.
Well, unless Kane like vowed not to stalk Hardy anymore. But I thought that was the last time, so I don't know. That was when he banged Lita. That was
a contract of conception. Apparently is the story here.
Fucking stupid. I'm looking at Graham now just to see if there's something we're missing that would make this make more sense. But I'm not.
The match itself is, as a standalone, the match is fine. It's nothing, it's nothing earth-shattering. It was okay. It wasn't great.
He doesn't have anything on it.
But yeah, this is highly illogical. And do you find it a waste of Lita?
No, whatever. Who cares?
Well,
what else should she be doing? I guess wrestling, you think? I don't know.
Well, the women weren't in. Well, she'd be in that ridiculous segment later.
Yeah, there's
so
much
show.
So many other women right now. Whatever. It is what it is. But.
It is what it is. So anyway, Kane wins, and I'm pretty sure it was the next night on Raw.
Hardy looks sadder than Rotella, just like, sorry human being.
With that ridiculous face he made. with his sunburned beanie and his perfectly nice, perfectly clean, nice polo shirt, which
I imagine that he just hangs it up and he's like, all right, I'll see you next Memorial Day.
Because it's the only one that doesn't have fucking sweat stains on it. So
that or he just like, he always looks the same at these parties. So I just assume he's like waiting in the backyard for the next one.
He's in like a cocoon.
Right? He's
You're like unhooking.
Dressed, cryogenically frozen for a year. Right, then he comes out ready to go for this party.
Same sandals.
Same outfit. Exactly down to the right down to the shirt and short. Everything's like identical every year.
There's just a couple extra kids sprinkled. And I feel like his family pops up. Oh, there we go. You know, it's so funny. Yeah. So the next night on Raw, I believe it's the next night. Probably was the next night. Kane and Lita were to wed, and we'll delve more into that in our next vault. Because that pay-per-view takes an odd turn, or that storyline takes an odd turn at the next show. Another ingredient is put in the mix.
Oh, may they throw a mass junk on a table and slice it off with a knife just to really finish the story.
And when Kane said, I guess you're not nearly the man that I am, or something, he just looks at him like, yeah, I guess you're right.
You're right, sorry.
Sorry. All right, we have a promo, or we have an interview, and it's kind of a cool foreshadowing of, you know, the future of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what it is, JR.
Randy Orton had an interview, and it gets interrupted by John Cena.
Yes!
Kind of sets the stage for an ascent of young stars. I thought it was kind of a nice touch.
Very nice. Well, it's you watch it now, and you know you look ahead where we are now, you know, 11 years later. And
you got the touch.
Well, still there. So...
you got the power.
Oh, they're both still there, and Cena, and Cena is in the U.S. title chase.
Right.
11 years later. Of course, a myriad of other things he's won since. But all right. Next up, speaking of
John, we want, and after we take Lex Luger and the Giant, we want the gold, sucker. Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga.
I'm taking the U.S. title in the John. Yeah, we have a new, as JR mentioned, a new United States heavyweight champion, and that is the aforementioned Booker T. But we begin a very cool concept, JR. This is maybe number two behind tournaments is my favorite storyline foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
On 7-1, Booker T became the number one contender for the U.S. title by defeating Rob Van Dam and Rene Dupree. On 7-8, Booker received that title match. During the bout, Cena accidentally clotheslined GM Kurt Angle to the floor. Luther Reigns jumped Cena, leading to no contest, and Angle then stripped Cena of the title, saying that Cena had broken his probation by putting his hands on the GM once again. Angle got some revenge the next week by forcing Cena into a handicap match, which ended when Booker pinned him. On 7/22, Angle handed the title to Booker, saying the board's decision would come down the following week, but he was so sure of the outcome he gave Booker the gold now. And the next week, the new GM, Teddy Long, took the belt back for Booker, announced that a new champion would be determined in an 8-man elimination match. Booker won that match, officially becoming the champ. On 8/5, Long told Booker that he and Cena would compete in the best of 5 series to determine an undisputed champion, since Cena had never lost a belt. Cena would get the final strike in on 8/12 when he pinned Booker in a 6-man match. And of course, this best of concept was a playoff of Booker and Chris Benoit's best of 7 war back in 1998 with the WCW TV title on the line.
To just to clarify, just to go a step further on that, because I always got confused. I always thought it was the it was for the TV title. It was actually to be number one contender
The
TV
yes.
title, and then you got to face, I think it was Fit Finlay.
Yep.
Or Belfast Bruiser, whatever his name was in 98. I think it was Fit Finlay.
Oh, correct.
Yes.
I like the outcome. I'm not sure I'm a fan of the process to get there. Like, reading it back again, it's so screwy. Like, they should have had Booker beat Cena with Angle's help.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the stripping of the belt and putting on the reins. Like, why didn't Teddy just give it back to Cena since Kurt stripped him? You know what I mean? It's like, I don't
right.
know. Why?
Another logic hole.
Yeah, just not even a hole, just a weird direction they took it. Like, if Teddy really wanted to be, you know, the kind of the people's GM, why not just make things right? But anyway, I think they should have just had Booker beat him kind of sneakily. Or even done the, you know, another four-way rematch from the Bash and maybe pins Dupree or something and wins a belt. I just thought the way they went about it was a little odd. But anyway,
right.
So here we are. Best of 5. This is match number 1. So the title's not actually on the line.
No. It's match 1.
Right. You'd have to win the series to win the belt. So you know, and Booker I thought was a good person to help Cena continue the rise up the ladder. I think that's why, obviously, they're doing it here. Cena gets a quick start, gets a neck breaker for a near fall. Booker turns a tide by crotching Cena on the top rope and shoving him to the floor. Booker cuts off a Cena comeback with a spine buster. Cena avoids an axe kick, but Booker stays in control. Booker wastes time with a spinneroonie. Cena pops up and hits him with the FU for the win. I thought it was a pretty bland match. I mean, it was well worked, but nothing special. Very paint by numbers, and I remember being kind of disappointed by this one. I thought going in, I had a lot of expectations that this would be pretty good. Booker was still kind of, you know, living off that rep that he was, you know, very good in-ring worker, and it seemed like, I don't know if people were getting too excited just based on the idea of the best of thing, you know, because of the Cena Booker. I mean, the Benoit Booker series was so good that people just assumed this one would match it. But it really, this first match is just very, you know, it looked like it was like straight out of like a training camp.
Yes, I thought I would, when I just watched it, a few moments, like maybe an hour and a half ago. And I agree with you. I was hoping to get pumped up by this, too. And I am one of those ones, you know, number one, tournaments, number two, series. Those are both awesome. Incidentally, JR, and I always ask you this, you get, I guess, three choices, technically. What do you remember what throwback Cena was wearing?
Just going to start making note of this. So they're in Toronto. Was it Toronto related?
Mm-hmm. If you get three choices. Well, if you want to count the Argos, you have four choices.
All right, Joe Carter.
Well, I don't remember the guy, but you got the team right. Because they never really showed the back of the jersey, but he was wearing a Blue Jays jersey.
Okay, I thought so.
But he never. I wanted him to turn around, and I'm thinking it might have been Joe Carter, maybe Devon White or one of those guys. But he took it off before we could see who was on the back. But you are correct. It was a Toronto Blue Jays jersey. Yeah, I was bummed too. I was watching it, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is really, it's like, all right, step four, guys. Do this exchange. Okay, step five, do this exchange. But you know, it was disappointing because I thought they looked, their interaction in the four-way at the Bash was excellent.
Right.
And it really looked like we were going to get a great, great go of this. And this is one of the ones that, because again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this is one of those pay-per-views that because everybody else says it sucks, you'll say it sucks even if you've never seen it. But this is one of the few times where a match that you thought you remember being actually pretty good really wasn't. And there's other cases on this show where the match you thought was bad, it was actually not too bad. But yeah, it seemed very formulaic. I was disappointed. Having said that, though, let me ask you, do you still feel Cena's on the fast track?
Yeah, I think the Orton interview, and he's played up like a big deal here. And the fact that he wins the first match... Mm-hmm. Obviously, he doesn't get the title, but wins the first match.
I was surprised. I had forgotten. I thought Booker won. I didn't look at the result. I forgot the results.
That screams they wanted him to get the win on the big event.
Yeah.
So they went kind of backwards and had the face win the first match. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it was that they wanted him to get the SummerSlam win. So to me, that screams that, yes, they still see him as a big deal. And I think they paired him with Booker more because they thought Booker could help him grow versus like wanting to get Booker into a big profile feud.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Booker at this point can go either way. He's not enhancement, but he can help young guys, and he could still be a good heel slash, you know, upper mid-card, maybe main event guy at times. So there you go. John Cena takes a one-match-to-none lead in the best-of-five series for the United States Championship in a match that was typical. It's like a game one of a series of two teams that have never played each other. You kind of get a feeling out, depending on the sport, turnovers, errors, whatever. And then as the series progresses, maybe they start to, you know, connect a little bit better. So we'll see. Our first title match of the evening is next, JR.
This is where we go backstage first.
That's where
Bischoff and Teddy Long meet.
Oh, that's where this is.
And Bischoff jokes that he'll easily outlast Teddy like he has. And Teddy threatens to sign all of the Raw guys that are sick of Eric, including his nephew Eugene. So Teddy tossing shots already.
And the first thing you think of is, wow, Teddy, you really aren't going to be here very long, are you? Right. That's the first guy you're thinking of.
All the top stars.
Top stars like Eugene. All right. We get back to the ring for our first title match of the evening. It is for the Intercontinental Championship. Your champion, as we know. The hometown guy tonight, Edge. You think you know me. Who's got the mail? And, of course, he won the title at Vengeance over Randy Orton. But this is a three-way, JR. Mm-hmm. And who were his two opponents this evening?
On 8-2, Chris Jericho had Edge as a guest on the highlight reel, and he informed the champ he'd be defending his IC title against Jericho and Batista at SummerSlam. The two argued a bit and then ended up brawling in the ring. The next week, Jericho pinned Edge in a non-title match, and after the match, Batista assaulted Edge. So, big spot here for Davey B, for Chris Jericho, back in the IC title mix.
Mm-hmm.
And Edge has his title on the line at a big spot. And Batista gaining some momentum has a killer look, as you mentioned earlier, has Guido hair. But
also
just shredded and ripped and ridiculously.
Oh, he looked great. Everything else, he looked great. But the fucking hair was like glistening. It was off. It was great.
Yeah, immediately looks like just a big star when he comes out. Edge still champion, still just we say it every month. Still not smooth. That is still not really fitting in. Just feels awkward. Like that ease that he used to wrestle with just has not come back yet. Good role for Jericho here, kind of being the senior advisor in the match with, you know, a guy that's a little bit younger and then a guy who's a rookie. So I thought that was a good spot for him. Batista decks Edge as he gets in the ring. The crowd is all behind Jericho to start. Batista powers back, sets up the Batista bomb, but Edge breaks it up with a chop block. Edge, I thought, had some pretty cool red tights. I like those. Edge drop kicks Batista to the floor, and the crowd starts to boo Edge here. Edge starts to own it and play it up, which I thought was good to see that he was that aware of it. Batista gets wiped out, leads to a solid back and forth to Jericho and Edge. Jericho locks the walls, but Batista breaks it up. Edge gets an impaler on Batista for a near fall. Jericho breaks up a spear attempt by Edge. Batista hits a spinebuster on Jericho for a near fall. Jericho gets a very close near fall on Edge with a roll-up. And then Jericho knocks Batista to the floor, and Edge spears him for the win. I thought it was a good choice, obviously, to pin Jericho and not Batista. Solid match. Again, didn't steal a show or anything, so it was a little bit disappointing. I think a lot of people thought with Edge and Jericho in there that it would be, a really hot match. But again, mm-hmm. we're still not there yet with Edge. And I thought the most interesting part of this, to me, was that Edge was booed in his hometown. And that he was a little shaky in his hometown. So the crowd, which has a notorious reputation, that we'll talk about a little bit more as we go, for being very counter to what WWE was looking for on this night, to the point where the announcers even start to recognize it. We'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in retrospect, they'd be start to be called like Bizarro World, and Toronto would get this reputation for going against the grain. And to me, it really starts in this match. Like, this smattering of it before this match, but this is where it really kicks off, and it finishes through the rest of the show.
Which is odd, because, you know, Edge got a pretty good pop when he came out. Even Batista did. Jericho gets his normal pop.
But the crowd was completely cheering Jericho.
Yes.
As soon as the match started. They were all behind him. But then they even started chanting for Batista.
Yeah. You think it's because Edge feels out of place? You think the fans have recognized that he's been... Maybe they feel he didn't deserve to win the IC title, or...
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been really great since he came back, and I think everyone just really liked Jericho. And Batista, you know, this isn't the last time he's cheered heavily here at 04.
No, not at all. No,
agreed. I think he looked like a badass, and he's really cool, and I think Edge just feels a little outdated at this point. Or just lost, and I think the crowd picked up on that, and I think why. And Jericho's just beloved. I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yes. I think there's another part of this that has a lot to do with our main event, and I'll get into that when we get to that match, but I think there's another part of that with Edge that helps in this sudden change of energy against Edge. And you can even tell when the match ended, and Edge... for the first time gives the Edge face, which is kind of like the Edge face we'll get used to from, you know, late 04 pretty much till he retires, which is the, you know, I got you guys. He's right. You know, and even JR acknowledged, you know, Edge or Jerry, one of the two said, you know, Edge did, what he did may not have been popular tonight, but he got the job done. So they were already almost like Vince maybe backstage caught something and said, you know what? Roll with this. Roll with it. This might work. And I feel like the JR and King's tone changed.
Oh, yeah.
As the match progressed because of that. So I definitely think that Edge, there was an audible call backstage during this match that, all right, let's, you know what? I think we're maybe onto something here. Let's roll with this. And then they did. So they might have gotten lucky as Bizarro World, you know, kind of reared its head, may have actually helped may have actually helped Edge out in the long run. So there you go. Edge retains his Intercontinental Championship, but there might be some changes in the offing for the Rated. Oh, I won't say it because that's his nickname yet. For Edge. But the match is okay. It's nothing earth-shattering.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean,
yeah,
I enjoyed it, but again, I think it's like seeing a Booker, and I think this is where that you start to look at this card and be like, eh. Because I feel like a lot of these on paper had that potential to be very good, and it was kind of like these matches in the middle are kind of the make or break is if this card will go down as a real strong thumbs up or just kind of a blah show. And so far, the two matches that maybe were the hinge of the card have fallen below the line. And that was Cena Booker and then that match, which had the potential to really stand out and be great, but instead ended up being kind of flat.
Right, exactly. So there you go. Edge retains his Intercontinental Championship. Match is, and 8.5 minutes. I feel like they were doing a lot of balancing of the match times because they seem to have, once again, in terms of times, backloaded the show with the longer matches. So a match that probably could have been, you know, just based on the guys, maybe 14 minutes or so. It was only just under 8.5. So, all right. Is there anything in between here? I don't think there's a promo, right? Nothing? Right. All right, next up, we have a WrestleMania rematch. However, this time, no title on the line. It is about pride and revenge. JR?
Following the Bash, Kurt Angle's abuse of power got even more out of control. On 7-1, he punished referee Charles Robinson by making him fight his bodyguard, Luther Reigns. On 7-15, things came to a head during an Eddie Guerrero-JBL Steel Cage title match in... Do you remember where?
Providence, Rhode Island, of course. Right.
During the match,
I was not there.
I was with you.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Watching it.
Yes, that's right. It was a Thursday night. We were doing NBA.
During the match, a masked man hit the ring, prevented Eddie from winning. Eddie was able to unmask the man to reveal Kurt Angle, who was supposedly crippled for life with his broken leg. Despite the reveal, Angle was proud of himself as JBL retained. A week later, Angle, back in his wheelchair, was maniacal, proclaiming that SmackDown would be the home of morality and not house guys like Cena and Guerrero as its champions. He fired announcer Tony Schimmel for the way he proudly announced Eddie as the winner back at WrestleMania. He also fired Funaki after he told Angle he was stripping Cena of his gold was unfair. At the end of the night, Angle's world came crashing down when Mr. McMahon met him in the ring. Vince asked Kurt to resign. Kurt begged for his job because he's unable to wrestle, but Vince said he's going to be given a humanitarian award for hiring a handicapped Angle, but that was ruined by Angle showing he was healthy last week. Vince fired him as GM, reinstated him as a wrestler, and put him in a match with Eddie here. Vince grabbed Angle's crutch and swung it at him to prove that Kurt was healthy. On 7/29, Eddie came out with a box of goods that he took from Angle's GM office, and he auctioned them off to the crowd. But Angle came out to interject when Eddie tried to sell Kurt's gold medals for $1. Angle threatened to steal Eddie's car, but when he turned the key, powder shot out of the steering wheel, sending Angle scurrying. In the following 2 weeks, saw both men deliver intense promos to set the stage, which were much needed because with the powder, it felt like Doink was shooting with Kurt Angle. But I, you know, it was good to see Angle back in the ring. That cage match with Eddie and JBL is excellent.
Yes.
You know, maybe even the best of the three. And that tells you how good that series is. And that is, I believe, on one of Eddie's DVDs. So go check that out if you've never seen it. Great match. And again,
I think it's on the SmackDown set too.
I was duped for the third time. I thought Eddie was, again, going to win the title back. I still was like not. Even though I like JBL, I still wasn't on board with, I guess, thinking he was going to hold it. I figured Eddie would win, and then him and Angle would reignite their feud over the belt. But I guess once JBL finally won that third match, it was proof that JBL was here to stay, and Eddie was done as champ. So Angle back in the mix, feud reignited. Great feud. Eddie's still very over. Kurt looks great. Lots of Matt stuff early. Guerrero's playing mind games. He goes after Kurt Angle's ankle. Eddie works the arm and then grabs the ankle lock, but Kurt escapes and hits an Angle slam. Kurt grabs the ankle lock, but Eddie gets the ropes. Kurt grabs it again after a Luther shot, and Eddie again gets the ropes there. Kurt punishes the ankle, wrenching it and loosing Eddie's boots. Eddie gets a desperation Angle slam and then hobbles through his comeback. He hits the Three Amigos. Kurt catches Eddie on the top and hits a super throw for a near fall. Eddie misses the frog splash, and Kurt gets an Angle slam for a near fall. Kurt rips off the boot and gets the ankle lock, but Eddie uses the ref to break the hold. Eddie smacks Kurt and Luther with his boot and gets a great near fall on a frog splash. The crowd is really getting hot here for Eddie. Kurt grabs an ankle lock, and this time Eddie was not able to escape when Kurt pins the other leg down with his knee and then gets the heel hook for the tap, which I thought looked awesome. It was a great, hard-hitting, smartly worked match. A big win for Kurt. Eddie's slump continues. Really fun. Easily the match of the night so far. And I don't know. I think I liked it pretty much right up there with their Mania match.
I was about to ask you that, what you thought. The Mania match is fantastic. But yeah, this one is... I thought this one, just watching it a moment ago, was very, very good.
Well, I liked it a lot, too, because the psychology built for Mania. Because...
Right.
Eddie is like kind of conscious of the ankle, and he goes, he's trying to mess with Kurt's head. But Kurt, you could tell it's in his head about Eddie loosening the boot. So he keeps trying to just take the boot off so Eddie can't fuck him again when he goes to the ankle lock. So I thought they really did a nice job building off their history of Mania.
Yes. And it made for an equally good match. But you're dealing with two guys who know both work rate and chemistry and psychology all at the same time. So you knew you weren't going to get a piece of crap here. And it certainly was not. Just about 13:38, good length, and they told a great story. And do you think there's a Luther Reigns overload?
I mean, he wasn't here, really.
So. Didn't he come out? Well, he was on the outside, no?
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't. He didn't play a vital role in the match or anything.
Okay, right. No, I'm just asking.
No, I think it's fine. I mean, he's the GM and Top Heel's bodyguard. I mean, was there diesel overload in 94?
Oh, absolutely not. Okay, but don't. That was kind of sad that you just compared Diesel to Luther Reigns, though.
Well, I mean, Luther Reigns is like Diesel 93. You know what I mean? Like, no?
Okay. All right. At least you qualified it by the year. You know,
well, not like, I'm not talking about friggin' NWO Kevin Nash. I mean, I'm talking about like. Well, I'm talking about proto bodyguard Diesel. I mean, this is the role they were building for Luther Reigns. I mean, is it really that out of the realm possibility that he could put it together and, you know, become Diesel? I don't think so.
No, that's quite true. Diesel had better hair, so. I was just curious. It's a good match. It's a great match. Well told. Both sides were great. They moved around a lot. Psychology of the ankle is tremendous. Although I always thought to myself, I always thought that they really tried to. This was an odd observation. You always thought that they would wear like longer socks to protect themselves. You know, under their boots,
right.
Really. And he always wears like the kind of socks you and I wear, like those cutoffs down here. It's like, that's all you have on right now. It just seemed really weird. I don't know why, but anyway, it was very, very good.
Yeah. I like the way the psychology built.
And, I like Kurt.
And Angle getting the win back was good. I mean, he needs to reestablish himself coming off the GM stuff and get the win back for Mania. And he looks strong. And I mean, the match was contained really right to the ring, which I thought was good. And these guys have really good chemistry, and the match made a lot of sense. And you have very clearly defined people, face heel. The crowd stayed that way in this match. And I thought, I really dug it. I really enjoyed this match this time around.
Me too. Yeah, I did as well. And I like that Kirk got the win. I think he needed it. Eddie, I don't think we're, he is in a slump, but it's, this is not a guy that can't snap out of it.
And he's still so dominant, like on TV and in the storyline and everything. I mean, he's not like being booked as a loser. He's just had a tough time in
he's not Matt
big
Hardy.
Matches. Right. No, he didn't have his girlfriend taken and marrying some other guy, then gets knocked up and loses the match for the chance to maybe marry her.
For the chance to maybe marry her because, that's the only way you can get your woman to marry you is to beat another guy up in a match.
That she hates.
That she hates, yeah. Even though she has his seed in her. All right. Ew. Why don't we take a break? Five matches in. What do you think so far?
Disappointing. I think we had a great first match, or a very good first match, a great match here, but the sandwich stuff in between was disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And that counts the Kane headache, the Cena Booker disappointment, and then that triple threat match that was just kind of there.
Yeah.
So we're looking for the second half of this thing to save it.
Yes. Well, we've got our two, I wouldn't call this a triple main event because this next match to me is certainly not a main event. But we do have both big belts will be still up for grabs, the WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship on the line. Mm-hmm. And then we finally put to bed the feud or the storyline, thank God. More coming up on with SummerSlam 2004.
Scott, we have breaking news here.
What?
Yes. You're going to have to wait one more year to be crowned the oldest person in the world because we want to wish a happy 116th birthday to the oldest woman in the world. She was born in Georgia in 1899.
Wow.
Geraldine Talley. Very happy birthday to Miss Talley. 116 years old.
God bless her.
Yes. So You will wait another day to become the oldest man in the world. as soon as Geraldine passes on.
You mean second oldest. I think D'Amato still might be ahead of me.
But anyway, we hope we wish the best for Miss Tally. Hope she lives another 116, which would be pretty amazing.
Wow.
All right, that's it. We're out.
I think she could be Kane.
Probably Gangrel is invading the breaking news music.
Oh, God, time for a news break.
All right, let's get some words. Because
Goga Dolt
Ronick.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, The Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net's Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather, Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats' RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN podcast network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. It's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back reviewing SummerSlam 2004. Geraldine Tally still alive, so Scott's still waiting in anticipation.
It's like get the trophy.
Move up to number two. PlaceToBeNation.com is number two to nobody. Your number one place to be in your pop culture world. Scott, rapidly approaching our two-year birthday here, two-year anniversary.
It'll be 2 years a week from tomorrow.
Your 67th birthday will be on the...
Woohoo! My 114th birthday.
That's right, yes. We're almost there. PoliceNation.com. New episode of the Pro Wrestling Super Show, looking at the future of North American wrestling. Stephen Graham, joined by Will and Tim Livingston. We'll talk about Will in a moment. Mm-hmm. New episode of the Kings of Sport, where the players dwell. Nate Milton and Marcus Vandenberg are back.
Yeah.
Talking some hockey and other topics. Mm-hmm. Speaking of sports, quarter season baseball awards, UFC 87, and yes, more Deflategate from the Sports Lounge as Roger Morissette, the Cowboy, joined by Keith Schmidt and Cowboy Sr. And Cowboy Sr. goes completely off the rails. If you want to hear the rantings of a delusional old man Homer,
tune into
the Sports Lounge and hear him defend Tom Brady. Jason Greenhouse did your holiday weekend playlist. The Seinfeld series rewatch continued with The Sniffing Accountant, Season 5, Episode 4. That's me, Aaron George, Andrew Flanagan, Jordan Duncan, and Jason Greenhouse, who joined up here in Season 5.
Big announcement, the full series on Hulu now.
Yeah, but
June 24th.
I really got screwed, though, because of that, because they're starting to crack down now, and they shut down the Seinfeld script site, which is what I use to compile the quotes for these pieces. So I'm either going to have to scale down or start typing as I listen.
Ugh.
It's a pain, because I just kind of leave that site up as I watch the episode and just grab the quote quick if I like it. So
right.
That sucks. PTBN's What If series, our second one, of course, is a monthly series. The first one in April looked at championship matches. What if we did? What if the title did not change? And here we do. What if Sting jumped to WWE in different years than he finally did here in 2014? Mm-hmm. So, Scott, here are the ones we did. I wrote about 1998. Ben Morse looked at 1993. You looked at 1996. Matt Davis went back to 1987. Mark Clare did 1991-1992 arc. And Dan McGinn did 2011, which is the year he was really strongly rumored to be coming in time for WrestleMania 27. So we went into, we write a couple paragraphs each on what would have happened in each of those years if Sting had jumped from WCW to
WWE. It was fantastic. Everybody did a great job on that. Definitely check it out if you haven't read it yet.
We'll have to come up with next month already. So
yes, definitely.
Star Trek, Deep Space Nine, Glenn Butler wrapping up pretty soon here, season one. Episode 16, The Forsaken, so be sure to check that out while you're Star Trek fans. PTBN's main event, episode 34, looked at Payback and NXT Unstoppable, and also gave their first history lesson of TNA, and that'll be a ongoing situation there. Jordan Duncan, Steve Willey, and Jason Greenhouse were in the house to break that down. XL and Bad Street, episode 5, The Price of Ridiculousness, The Death of Jim Crockett Promotions, part 1, and Chris had a powerhouse team with him, Dylan Hales and David Bixenspan, so be sure to check out that final days of JCP, part 1. Scott, our Vintage Vault Refresh series rolled along Royal Rumble 1994, featuring my live notes from the Providence Civic Center.
That is correct.
Evening. Yep. Also linked in there is, of course, the We Missed the 90s that me and Josh Richard did. Kind of look back at our friendship and the time period of going to that show.
Yes, that was very good. I enjoyed that.
Russell Hotness. Russell Sellers had his new hotness. Secret Convergence Week 6. If you didn't hear the PTBN reaction show of NXT TakeOver Unstoppable, I recommend as soon as this is done, you go listen to that one. And that had Will joined by Dylan, Chris, Pete, and Johnny Sorrow. And first, they did a great look at the show. And during the show is when all the stuff about TNA closing up or getting canceled by Destination America broke. And whether or not you're a Bob Ryder fan, this is a must-listen rant from Dylan and the boys. Just a complete takedown piece of Bob. So if you're looking for a good laugh, this thing got lots of rave reviews from across the internet for just their takes on Bob Ryder. And again, as Will mentions in the episode, not the official views in any way of PlaceNation.com, but we do recommend you go listen.
Yes.
Also, Scott, last week was Chris Wallace, a notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls' birthday, to pay tribute.
Yes.
We reposted my Forever Notorious piece. I looked at kind of what his music meant to me growing up and some highlights of his career and life. Glenn Butler had his Wednesday Walk on the Web, Brian Bayless' his Raw Review, and, of course, Kevin Kelly Show, episode 35. Dr. Tom was back in the house once again. He talked about a bunch of different topics with Tom. He talked about Bill DeMotte and the issues with the training. He got a lot into the training. Tom's experiences when he was doing the job and his thoughts on DeMotte's firing. And then he stuck around to play a game where we did a little name and word association. So him and Kevin delved pretty deep into some of those names. So a really good listen if you want to check it out. Also, Scott, I want to announce the debut of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast that's coming hopefully this week. We're planning on taping episode 1 this week. That's me and good old Will from Texas. Of course, the admin at ProWrestlingOnly.com, the leader of the PTBN reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling. And it's going to be a different format. So every episode, it's almost like a PTI kind of format. So we're going to have three segments, and we're going to have a set clock on each segment. And we're going to do all kinds of different games and exercises. Three different ones an episode. We're going to do a mailbag. We already have tons of questions from Facebook and from the PWO message board. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I like working with Will. Not sure on how often. You know, we're looking maybe monthly right now, maybe every few weeks. We'll try and get on a schedule and start cranking these out. But we're really excited. We've had a bunch of messages back and forth. We had a phone call the other night to start planning a little bit of this. So we're really looking forward to adding this show to the menagerie of shows. Yes. On both the Place to Be podcast iPod feed, iTunes feed, and the PWO PTBN feed as well. So, PlaceToBeNation.com, the one-stop shop, your only place to be in your pop culture world. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, place number two, Be Nation on Twitter. Get on board. 2 years in the making. It's been a great 2 years, Scott. Looking forward to 116 more, along with Geraldine. So
that's absolutely true.
Yep.
All right. You okay? Well, that was a long one. Oof. You want almost a full week.
You know what? I could really use a break.
Time to play the game.
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Song and dedication was brought to you by a young man from Eastern Pennsylvania, Brad Woodling out there. Big Triple H fan, called in, requested a long song, dedicate and set up this match. And Brad, that one's for you.
Now, on with the countdown.
Now, back to my disputed estate.
Yes. I am still an asparagus.
You ever hear the one where he's like flips out about the guy playing
It's fucking dog.
Yeah, no, the one where he, the guy plays like the they have like the fast song coming out of the like the death.
The dead dog dedication. Play a fast song out of a fucking dead dog dedication. I have to find that.
Playing a fast record coming out of this. God damn it.
Ponderous, man. Ponderous. I'll have to find that now. All right. Just read it. I have nothing left to say about
Fuck
this.
Fuck you. It's your boy. You're reading now, right?
Oh, God.
On 7-12, an angry evolution struck and laid out Chris Benoit, Eugene, and William Regal to close out the show. Regal had really begun sticking up for Eugene, who had grown quite fond of since being assigned to him as his keeper. The next week's show opened with Triple H and Bischoff laughing it up over Eugene's demise. Eric said his nephew was now gone for good and gave Triple H an Iron Man title match with Chris Benoit as a reward. As they gloated, William Regal came out and attacked Hunter. A week later, Benoit defeated Hunter with the assist from a returning Eugene. On 8-2, Triple H called out Eugene for costing him his title chance. Regal came down and said and took responsibility for unleashing Eugene the week before. Regal challenged him to a match, which Hunter quickly accepted. During the bout, Hunter used a pair of brass knuckles and bloodied Regal, giving Regal the DQ win. Hunter then grabbed a sledgehammer and beat Regal senseless with it, as medics were wheeling Regal to the back. On a stretcher, Hunter grabbed him by the neck brace and flipped him over on a nasty bump where he landed just unprotected face first on the floor. Yeah. As medics were wheeling Regal to the back, like we mentioned, Bischoff then granted Hunter a match with Eugene at the pay-per-view. On 8-9, we saw that Regal was keeping Eugene in a hotel room until it was time for the match. However, when Regal was distracted, Eugene snuck out and headed off. When Eugene got to the ring, he called out Hunter. The game appeared on the Tron and revealed that he was in the hotel room. The camera panned over to see Regal beaten down and tied up. Hunter hammered him some more, blaming Eugene for everything that happened. Eugene got the last licks in when he saved Benoit from an Evolution beatdown, but the feud was pretty much all Triple H dominating. Did you think it made Regal look kind of weak? It almost made him look like a weak manager, the way Hunter just beat him up.
It wasn't pretty. He really got the fucking hell kicked out of him.
I mean, they were good beatdowns.
Yes, they were. But it was not good. But I did like the fact though that they did kind of play on Eugene's, you know, lack of common sense because he, you know, right. Triple H just played him as he knew Eugene wanted to leave and run to the ring, and then meanwhile Triple H just casually walked in the room and tied him to like the fucking heater and then beat the shit out of him. Somebody else that wanted to get the dedication.
And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuckles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. I'm coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. It's a last goddamn time. I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying. Boy, this is fucking ponderous, man. Ponderous, fucking ponderous.
Oh, yeah, nonstop music, Rick D's.
And your T-shirts are too tight.
Ponderous, man. Fucking ponderous.
Good stuff.
Awesome.
This is where I really... We talked about the kind of the uncomfortableness with Eugene in the past, and especially at Vengeance. But the beatdown they put on him and Regal and Benoit that night, I don't know. This is where it started to get like too much for me. I mean, I know he's not really mentally impaired, but that's the story. That's what he is. And when you watch someone just beat the shit out of him and like leave him, you know, beaten and bloodied or whatever, it feels really uncomfortable. I just wasn't crazy about it. And I thought it did make Regal look like kind of a pussy that Triple H just dominated him twice, beat the shit out of him.
I almost feel like, though, yes, I agree.
Snuggles.
Fucking dog dying. Poor loser. Oh, poor Snuggles. Sounds like if Dan bought a second dog, his name would be Snuggles. So...
This dog is like his wife, Basil.
Dear Casey, can you just play me a song? I'm not sad.
When Basil and I went to Starbucks to get that coffee.
Then we stopped at Bed Bath & Beyond.
God damn it. I'm playing a love song, and I'm coming in here talking about this guy and his fucking dog.
You sound like Steve Austin. His fucking dog fucking died. Midgets. I got to get some midgets playing basketball.
Midget dogs.
They had that one on the stream earlier in the week again. I can never get enough of that. I almost think that they just wanted to get this thing over with. So they're like, all right, you know what, Triple H, just beat the shit out of everybody and finish this.
Do you think it's a weird match for Triple H's SummerSlam?
What's that?
It's a weird match for Triple H to be having a SummerSlam. Like, after he's dominated the main events all year.
Yeah.
Now he takes a step back and is in a match with freaking Eugene.
Yeah.
But I really thought it was too much. Eugene cost Triple H the title match in the Iron Man. What did you think of that? I mean, again, kind of a disappointing match considering the guys that were in it, Benoit and Triple H.
I got to watch that match again.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm just going
I don't remember if I hated it or not. I don't know. I'm sure it wasn't great. I'm sure, I mean, there's other, when Benoit ever wrestle in Iron Man? I can't remember. But obviously, Triple H's best Iron Man will always be Rock at Judgment Day 2000. This wasn't bad.
That week. I remember watching that one in my room in my house.
Yeah, I remember watching it at here, or actually downstairs in my old apartment. Yeah, I don't know. I have to watch it again. I don't know if it's.
I think we'd remember it if it was really good. So
yeah, and I mean, who knows where the hell we'll find it at this point anyway. So
all right, so Regal's a face, like we said. Triple H beat him up as well. Eugene tries to punch early, but Hunter fends him off. Big spot for Eugene, just in over his head completely. And really, I thought in some ways a no win for him. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. He wasn't going to win the match, and just it was elevating him past probably where he should be. Mm-hmm. The crowd turns on him right away. Back to the Bizarro stuff, but really, was it really? I don't know. Lillian gets knocked down by Hunter. Eugene checks on her and gives Hunter an opportunity to go on the attack. Really just playing up how Hunter just keeps outsmarting him here. Eugene comes back, but Hunter fakes a knee injury. Eugene frets and stops, and then Hunter just attacks him again. I was not a fan here of the ref using the X signal. I think it makes everything else look fake when he steps to the middle of the screen, looks at the TV camera, and does the big X. It's like, okay, now this is real. I don't know. I just hate that stuff.
Yeah.
Hunter starts to slowly punish Eugene. Eugene bounces back. It's a rock bottom, which I thought was the only time the crowd really popped for him, really, here at all. Hunter blocks a people's elbow. It's a spine buster. King gets a lame short bust joke, which is a stupid. Hunter gets more offense in, just going on way too long. The crowd is not showing any sympathy for Eugene, so the beating really was kind of useless. Eugene comes back again, hits a stunner, uses the steps on the floor. Flair comes out. Eugene drops a leg, but Triple H kicks out. Eugene slugs Flair off the apron, but gets caught coming off the top. Eugene actually wiggles out of a pedigree, hits a catapult, and then pedigrees Hunter, but Flair puts his foot on the rope. Flair gets tossed. Regal comes out and bashes him with the brass knux. Eugene waves to Regal, and that gives Hunter the opening to hit the pedigree for the win. I actually thought the match picked up a bit after Eugene made his last comeback. Mm-hmm. Hunter showed a lot of ass. He actually let Eugene use the pedigree, which is crazy, and Flair had to help him win. Long and bland early, but I thought it got fun late. Much more competitive than you may expect. I thought, honestly, the last 5 minutes of the match were the best part of this whole feud.
Yeah.
The hotel room attack and flipping Regal on the stretcher. Those are the three best parts.
Yeah.
And the bouncy house.
And yes, of course, the bouncy house. I agree that eventually the crowd was like, all right, we've had enough of the fake retarded storyline. Let's just, Hunter, just put him out of his misery and let us move on to something else.
I mean, it was clear that this was the nail in any kind of main event level stuff for Eugene.
He was
going to be done after this. But
yeah, he was done.
Yeah. What did you think of that last few minutes? I thought it got pretty hot there. When Flair came out, Regal came out, and Eugene started doing the comeback, and he hit the pedigree and all that stuff, I thought it got pretty good.
I tell you, if the crowd was in reverse and was really, I doubt it would have happened, but if they really wanted to go all out, if the crowd was really very, very pro Eugene, I could have seen him winning on the pedigree when he pedigreed Hunter. That would have been pretty wild.
Loss would have been better. Triple H's win would have been better if the crowd was really into Eugene. Like, if you had the crowd from Vengeance that loved Eugene, I think the match would have been pretty hot because Triple H was building some pretty good heat. It's just that the crowd was cheering it all, so it started making it feel really just kind of awkward and weird, and didn't really get the point across as well. I think if you had a hotter crowd for Eugene, I think the match, the way it was set up, would have been good. Even if Eugene lost, it would have been really pissed. Here, it's just kind of like they cheer. But
yeah,
I liked the hot finish. To me, that was actually pretty well done.
Yeah, the last few minutes were definitely better than the first 10, but this feud needed to end. It just needed to end. Bad enough that you put this character in a high profile, big time storyline involving the world heavyweight title. It's time to just end it and now move on. You couldn't go much further than this. So I think they needed to make it definitive. But at the same time, yes, Eugene got some moments in the last 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, where you thought, oh, my God, and then it doesn't happen. But Overall, the match is pretty bland, pretty average. I think it was, you know, one of the few times we've seen lately where Triple H is in a placeholder match and not a main event or something, you know. So I think we're just happy to see it end. There's nothing really more to say. It's just glad it's over and Eugene will be, you know, shunted down to the mid-card and some comedy follies and things like that. So Triple H wins.
I wonder where Triple H is headed.
Well, he's going in the other direction.
Where could it be? I wonder where he's going to head next.
I wonder where he's going to head next, too.
No one knows where it could happen. I wonder who he may enter into a feud with.
What if he has
a
dog?
Be a gold on the line. Maybe.
What if there's a dog dedication?
I mean, I know, you know, it was really cool for him to take this month off, but I'm really curious if he heads back to the world title.
Ponderous.
Picture.
Eugene was ponderous.
Very ponderous.
All right.
Scott was ornery.
All right, next up.
You can dodge a wrench. You can dodge a ball, Scott Criscolo.
Yes, you can. And over the summer, we, of course, as you mentioned in the beginning, JR, the Diva Search contest, it started July 19th, and a couple of the girls were eliminated, the twins. So the eight remaining were in this next competition, a dodgeball competition. And it was the eight remaining Diva contestants taking on Victoria, Gail Kim, Jazz, Stacey Keebler, Molly Holly, and Nydia. There really wasn't much peer, to be honest with you.
Touch, eating way too much, watching my team win with the twins. I love quarterbacks eating dirt, pom-poms and short skirts, fans who won't quit, and those twins, and I love them too.
So that, it was right around this time that commercial was hot too. It was 04. Because mm-hmm. NFL Network had just started, and it was like one of the six commercials they had.
Yes.
And, oh, my Lord. Mark Clare listens to this. I'm sure he'll be brought back to memories. Just watching that freaking ad over and over. And the twins. Can't hear the word twins without remembering that farce. But that's all you hear for quite a while in the world of Ascent Media in the fall of 2004 when NFL Network first launched. So this is held in the separate arena. It's in the Toronto Raptors practice facility. The coach is the referee. There's some fine TNA, you know, hot chicks in bikinis on the Diva Search side. It was kind of timely because when did Dodgeball come out? It was right around now, right? Was it 04?
You keep describing this funny game.
2004, June 18th. So very timely, actually. Good on them. So the idea of dodgeball was hot. The Diva Search team actually wins in an upset. The game itself was pretty lame. Of course, they have the little kerfuffle with Gail. Thinks she didn't get hit, but she does. And then Trish and Victoria argue to set up their continuing ongoing battle over the title, but they get pulled apart. So again, really nothing, but, whatever. It's chicks playing dodgeball. It's hot enough. And the Diva Search girls all look pretty good. It's funny looking at that group. And maybe it's just because I've never been a big fan of her, but it still kind of boggles my mind that Christy won over some of the girls they had in that group.
Speaking of great NFL Network commercials, do you remember this song?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Rich Eisen picking out his fucking watches.
Yes.
It's etched into my mind. Yep. The early days of the
that
NFL Network.
And Black Eyed Peas during the 2004 NBA Finals between the Lakers and the Pistons.
And then Meet Me Halfway was the big one the next year during the World Series during the DirecTV commercial. Meet Me Halfway. Anyway.
Yes.
So... yeah, I mean, it still surprises me that Christy was the one chosen when you look at the lineup of talents that were out there. I mean, I guess that speaks to them going more for the person. And not that she was ugly by any means, but just when you look at some of the other girls out there going by their normal profile of women, and maybe just not yet at that point. Like, I feel like if this group was up in, you know, a competition 5 years later, there's no chance Christy wins.
No.
Whatever, they all fucking get hired anyway, but
yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
we'll see them all.
Do you remember Vince Vaughn's character's name in Dodgeball?
Yes, it was
Did you like this movie?
Yes, of course. White Goodman was
Ben Stiller, yes.
Peter LaFleur.
Peter LaFleur. He of course owned Average Joe's.
Yes.
And White Goodman owned Globo Gym. Mm-hmm. And I did like my favorite guy
Steve
was
the Pirate.
And then, you know who else was in this? Eric Bischoff from Nitro 1995 was in this.
Yes, Justin Long.
Justin Long. That was a great analogy earlier.
This was one of, and this is really where Jason Bateman made his comeback, because he hadn't really been doing too much. Well, I don't know. Had Arrested Development started yet? Or that came after this.
That came after this.
Arrested Development started in, 03. So I think it just
so right
started
around this time. Yeah. Okay.
But this is like his big, it felt like it. In my world, anyway, it was the first time he was back on my radar. I guess he was in Starsky and Hutch. That came out around the same time. But, of course, he was the announcer on the Ocho there for the dodgeball stuff. So,
yes.
Well worth checking out again.
My Jason Bateman comeback was, even though he was in this, mine was Arrested Development. I thought that was a great show. Let's see. Let me look at his. Wow. Look at this. Space. He was in a movie called Breaking the Rules in 1992, and then he wasn't in a movie again until Love Stinks in 1999.
Yeah, no, he took a long time off, and then he's been everywhere since. But
well, yeah, I mean the breakup,
when he came back.
Yeah. The breakup, Arthur and the Invisibles, The X.
Now he's in a movie, five movies a year.
I know, he was in five movies in 2007. Can you name them all? No, one of them was Juno, which I always watched along with Beer Fest, a movie I seem to always watch when I visit you. Smoking Aces.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's not turn this into a Jason Bateman career perspective.
Did you like Forgetting Sarah Marshall? No, I'm just kidding.
All right. Next match.
Next up, our double main event. The WWE Championship is on the line. Your champion, of course, the great, well, maybe not the moment yet, but John Bradshaw Layfield winning the title, of course, at the Bash. Taking on the number one contender. Well, who is it?
The guy called The Undertaker. If you ever heard of him. Back on 7/22, JBL defeated a local jobber. After the match, Undertaker came to the ring, confronted the champion. JBL ran his mouth. Taker grabbed him and dropped him with a choke slam before announcing that he challenged JBL at SummerSlam. On August 5th, JBL brought out a midget Undertaker to mock and abuse. This drew out the real dead man who JBL got fought off by, and he loaded him up for a tombstone. But before he could drop him, Orlando Jordan hit the ring and saved the champion. The following week, JBL cut a really long promo, strong promo as well, setting the stage for the pay-per-view. He announced that Orlando Jordan was now his new chief of staff. And later that night, OJ faced off with Taker, and that match ended in DQ when JBL interfered. Of course, Orlando Jordan had debuted way back in May of 2003 as a face. And if you remember, Taker, did they do a thing where they shook his hand and gave him the respect thing or whatever, him and Jordan?
Yes.
After a year of meandering around the lower mid-card, he resurfaced here as the chief of staff, which I liked. JBL screamed as a guy who needed some kind of stable.
Yeah, some kind of heel faction. Yeah, heel group.
And we're
definitely
building it. So this is a really big challenge to JBL as unlikely reign continues. He vowed not to be intimidated, said he had a plan to win. JBL tries to work the arm, goes right at Taker without backing down, gets a near fall on a sidewalk slam. Taker slugs back and then works the arm, hitting old school, and then going into a submission stuff with a triangle choke. JBL worked on the leg, using the post and chair to break him down. Taker hobbles and tries to come back, but JBL trips Undertaker up and smashes his leg on the steps. Crowd does the wave as JBL works the leg. Taker uses takedowns and submissions to make his comeback. Crowd is completely disjointed here, entertaining themselves as Taker slugs JBL to the floor. They start doing the wave and doing all this other shit. Taker gets a superplex for a near fall. JBL kicks out of a chokeslam, and Jordan gets on the apron, giving JBL a chance to clothesline from hell. Both men wipe each other out, and the ref goes down as well. Jordan tosses the belt to JBL, but Taker survives. The match falls apart from there, with Jordan coming in and counts with the ref's limp hand. Taker hits a last ride, but the ref is still down. That allows JBL to kick out. Taker uses the belt on both men and gets DQ'd. Crowd did not like that finish at all. Taker pounds JBL all the way down the aisle. JBL starts bleeding after he gets thrown into the limo. Gets slammed on the hood of the limo and then chokeslammed through the roof, which I thought was a pretty cool post-match despite the shit finish, and really was just there to completely set up a rematch.
Yeah, yeah.
But all things considered, and I think you feel the same way, I thought the match was pretty solid. The crowd actually got into it late after they kind of farted around early. JBL's reign continues. And really, a match that has a bad rep, because I think everyone remembers a really awful like final minute or two. But before that was a decent brawl. And I thought they really told the story of JBL not being afraid and taking the fight to Taker and actually picking up some near falls early. Like, I thought all that was, explained well. I thought that was well done. And again, the crowd, they kind of won the crowd over after they were bullshitting early in the mm-hmm. match. What were your thoughts on this one, watching it again?
I loved it. I thought it was really good. I think, because here's the problem. You got to go into a match like this knowing who the two guys are, going, all right, what are these two going to do? They're going to use a lot of, strikes, punches, kicks, obviously, clotheslines, power bombs. We've got two guys with power finishers. Take that into consideration and see what they do with it. And the crowd kind of, I got to be honest with you, the crowd kind of ruined it for me the first, 6 or 7 minutes. But I feel like they kind of realized, well, this actually isn't half bad. And then they gave up, doing whatever the else they were doing in the crowd.
They were obnoxious in the first
half. They were brutal. The wave. I mean, Jesus, this isn't a Blue Jays game. Get a grip. And I think that they kind of settled in and said, wow, this actually isn't too bad. I liked Orlando Jordan. And I like I kind of was hoping that JBL would be the one that gets DQ'd. But the storyline for him is he's escaping, by the skin of his teeth. The only bad part about the end, you can kind of see on the replay that there was already a slit in the roof. I mean, we all knew he wasn't going to get choked right through an actual metal roof of a car, but it was funny regardless. But
yeah,
I liked how he was lying on the hood and the blood was dripping off the hood down into that. That was really a cool visual. Taker's got to grow his hair though. He's got this weird like this weird bob or something. Feels like his hair's not growing very fast. But still though, I thought the match was really good. It picked up in the last 6 or 7 minutes. Yeah, I liked it a lot. And obviously a rematch is in the offing for SmackDown's next pay-per-view in a couple months.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, not definitely. So there you go. JBL retains his WWE Championship as he defeats The Undertaker by disqualification because Taker used the belt after taking it out of Orlando Jordan's hand, which I thought, the only bad thing about that is Taker's usually not that dumb.
Right, it was stupid.
Yeah, Taker's usually not that dumb to get caught in something so stupid.
But JBL's the one champ here we have where it's believable if he just gets himself DQ'd. So they should have done that. Like, Jordan should have interfered and got the DQ.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess they wanted to win, but whatever. Just, I don't know. I would have just had Taker win by DQ if you're going to do the shit finish.
Mm.
Like, they basically mimicked the first Eddie-JBL match where Eddie got himself DQ'd.
Yes.
I mean, maybe that's JBL's hook, that he is so annoying that guys get pissed off enough that they get themselves disqualified, I guess.
I know, yeah.
Is that what it's supposed to be?
Entirely possible, but that was the only weird part. Taker is one of the greatest of all time and is historically not that stupid, but either way. So there you go. JBL in his red tights on this night. Still believable or no?
We're getting there.
I think
Jordan helped and hanging with Taker and taking the fight to him. I think winning that cage match, I'd say we're climbing.
Mm-hmm. I think we're getting there. I think he's good for SmackDown.
I still don't think he feels yet like the top guy on SmackDown. Like, I feel like Kurt and Eddie still feel like they're in the pole. But even though this match goes on later and the title's here, it still feels like Eddie and Kurt are like the top dogs on SmackDown. Like, it doesn't feel like JBL's gotten to that point yet. So we'll see, come October.
Maybe it was a little long. I mean, 17:37, but that's fine. I still think it was fine. I like that. That's a good point. I definitely think Kurt and Eddie are still the faces of the show, even though JBL is a champion, which is kind of odd. Although some people felt the same way on Raw too. So,
right.
Speaking of, time for our main event. The World Heavyweight Championship is on the line. Your champion, still Chris Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I differ slightly on this. You think his reign's been a little,
It's been the Triple H show for the most part, so whatever.
But
of course, you like it.
But well, I like it
fighting your guy.
But I like it because, but he's still champion. He hasn't had to lose yet.
This is the first time that it feels like it's to me that it's his show. He's away from Triple H, even though Orton is tied in with Triple H. It still feels like, okay, he's got a fresh challenger. out of the whole mix. The Eugene shit's over. Triple H isn't here. Like, it, for the first time, it, to me, it really felt like, you know, I don't know, a big deal.
I remember being...
And it's the first time he's main evented a show without either him or Sean in the picture.
True.
Like, yeah, the one time match with Kane, but everything else has been part of that three-way shit. Right. So for the first time, to me, it felt like he's getting the run like a real world champion, closing out SummerSlam against someone that's not Triple H.
Right. You mentioned our opponent for Chris Benoit tonight. It is indeed Randy Orton. How did he get this title shot, JR?
In the most exciting way possible, he won a Battle Royal on 7/26.
Yes.
A week later, he pinned Benoit in a six-man tag, hitting the RKO. I hate when they do Battle Royal, number one contender stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I hate it too.
Such a weak way to go about it. Huge push for Orton, though. Did you think it felt a little ahead of schedule?
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
And I think that started a vengeance when I remember we talked about being shocked that he lost the IC belt already.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. You just mentioned him, and you're probably going to think this is so ridiculous, but I thought that maybe they should have put Sean here. But
I don't know. It would have been good, but he just needed to get away from those guys.
I can't think of anybody else.
I mean,
nothing against Orton, but well, let's go through the.
Yeah, because I think maybe they could have went a different way with it.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so feels like another Benoit defense in some ways because Orton wasn't seen as ready yet, and we'll get to that. Fresh main event is a nice change of pace. The crowd is all over Earl immediately with the Brett, you screwed Brett chance. Lock up and feeling out early, trading of holes. Benoit frustrates and cuts off Orton. Orton trips up Benoit, gets a sharpshooter, but Benoit reverses it. Orton gets the ropes. Crowd is a bit flat here, but they are back and forth. It has been sharp between both guys. Orton goes to work on the shoulder and arm. Benoit breaks the arm work by DDTing Orton on the ring apron. Benoit misses a suicide dive and a nasty bump. He wipes out on the floor, hits his head on the barricade. Really gross looking. Orton goes to work on the neck. He wrenches it and uses a camel clutch. He hits a nice neck breaker off a hanging back breaker. Goes to the chin lock, but the neck work actually makes sense here. Benoit makes a crisp comeback, hitting a near fall on a Northern Light suplex. Orton gets a near fall on a perfect high cross body after blocking a superplex. Benoit gets a sharpshooter again. Orton wiggles free. Benoit hits five Germans, but Orton gets up his feet on a diving headbutt attempt by Benoit and another nasty bump. Benoit grabs a crossface of both men on the mat. Orton fights out of it. Orton reverses a Benoit grapple into an RKO and gets the upset win. And in a funny, you know, call forward to current day, JR yells RKO out of nowhere like seven times. I thought it was great that Orton won clean. And the rumor that was out there at the time, Scott, if you remember this, they wanted him to break Brock Lesnar's record for being the youngest world champion.
Yes,
they
didn't that want was
Brock
definite.
Associated with that.
No, I agree. I definitely remember that, yeah.
A really good match. I thought it was very hard fought, really well earned by Orton. It didn't hit like that great tier, but was kind of almost there. Like, it needed one more kick into the next gear to really get to that great, great level. Mm-hmm. It was hard-hitting, a big moment for Orton. Benoit's dream run comes to an end and pretty much brings to close to all the good feelings from WrestleMania 20 for him and Guerrero. I thought, despite a very good match and despite Orton having a pretty good presence, I thought it felt too soon for both outcomes. I thought it felt too soon for Orton to win, and I thought it felt too soon for Benoit to lose. Benoit leaves, but he comes back in and shakes Orton's hand, tells him to be a man, and he passes the torch. I thought it was an important moment, a match historically, and a strong close to what's been a pretty up-and-down show. And they would have a match the next night. We'll talk about much more next month, but that match is better than this one.
Yes.
Similar to Edge and Orton back at Vengeance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think Orton belonged in the match because he really carries himself well, like very strongly. Like he feels like a big deal when he comes out. Carries himself like a guy that belongs in this match. He hung with Benoit. He felt like he fit.
Right.
I think Benoit should have retained here and Orton should have won a little bit later.
I do too.
Like, I think, you know, you mentioned Sean, and you said you didn't know who else could be the contender. I think Orton's fine. I just think, like, stretch it one more month. Like, why couldn't we do the 0-3 here? And maybe we're being contradictory. Maybe because we like Benoit, and, you know, we didn't like the way they went about it the year before. Maybe we're feeling the same way. Maybe the crowd isn't as hot for Orton a month later, and then we say, why didn't they pull the trigger a month earlier? But I felt like Orton taking a hard-fought loss where he learns from his mistakes and comes back and wins later maybe would have made more sense, especially considering where things go the next night. Because that could have still happened, but it could have happened because they were mad that he lost. And then he goes on to win, without their help. You know, maybe something like that. But I feel like a hard-fought respect loss could have been more than kind of forcing the belt on him, whether it was or was not to break Brock's record, whatever the reasoning was. It just feels a little too soon. And it felt too soon that he lost the IC belt to Edge back of Vengeance, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think that Orton, I don't want to say he was out of his element, because
I don't think he was out of his element at all. I'm telling you, I thought he fit in the match really well.
He had a good. There was something about the promo earlier in the night, and then him walking down the ramp. I definitely feel like he's finally siphoned so much experience from Triple H and Flair that he knows even how to carry himself walking up the ramp. He wasn't as smarmy and frat boy asshole look like he was right when he was IC champion. It was very different.
Yeah, I agree.
It was very different this time around than it was during any of the times he came to the ring when he was Intercontinental champion.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he fought Mick at Backlash, it didn't look that way. He was still sadly the frat boy thing comes back, but losing would have been fine. And Benoit ending the night as champion in Canada would have been pretty cool. And then, whatever happens at Unforgiven. We'll get into that in a couple weeks. But the match is very good.
It was really, really good.
It was really good. I thought the pacing was good. I think Benoit kind of helped Orton out at times, which is good. And Orton adapted. The match on Raw is fantastic. I was stunned. I have no clue. I thought Benoit was just going to defend it successfully, and then Triple H is going to beat him the next month. That's what I thought.
Right, well, yeah. But I think there were rumors out there about the Brock thing heading in, because I remember it seemed plausible just because of that. Like, I think that was already being rumored, and it was one of those ones where we kind of didn't want to believe it, heading in.
Yeah.
But what do you give Benoit's reign, a grade? What would you give it?
B-.
Yeah. I'm right around the same place. He never really, to me, took that leap. He never became the guy. He didn't have great pay-per-view matches, really. The match with Kane was pretty good. Backlash was pretty good. Vengeance, was really first one-on-one singles main event.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that great. This match is good. And he had a bunch of good Raw matches, but he always just felt like one of the boys that had the belt,
Right.
Teaming with Jericho and Edge and whoever else against Evolution, Shelton. Just felt like he was just part of the crew, and he happened to have the world title more than being
Shelton
champion
on this show.
Yeah, huh? Yeah. What the hell is he?
Could have fit him somewhere here. Maybe he made a four-way out of that. I wonder maybe if adding him to the IC and made it a four-way might have made it a little juicier,
Yeah. Because he was kind of in that mix a little bit, but not completely, because remember, Jericho and Batista kind of had their issue going on, too, so.
Right.
But, yeah.
Mm.
So, overall, the show, very up and down. Had some pretty good matches. Well, I mean, the big matches delivered, I would say. I thought Eddie Angle was very good to great. Mm-hmm. I think the main event was very good to great. JBL Undertaker was pretty decent. And then Triple H Eugene had a good final few minutes. The only real kind of flat matches were those disappointing stretch of three in the middle. So,
yeah.
Historically, I think you look at the show and you kind of make the fart noise and say, wasn't that great, but when you watch it back, it was actually better than you might remember. I mean, I thought the matches all came off better than I remember them being.
Yeah, I
mainly on the back of Angle Eddie. That to me was the match of the night.
Angle Eddie was the match of the night, and I also liked Taker JBL more than I thought I would.
Right.
I'm crossing my fingers when we get to No Mercy, which is their rematch, that I don't remember it being as good, and I'm hoping it's not that bad. But
and I also this too, the
totally went out of your head. Horrible Bosses was Jason Bateman's best movie. No.
No, something you were saying about the just a second ago, the Taker JBL. I don't know what that was gonna say.
That the crowd got into it midway because okay. So there you go. SummerSlam 2004. It's probably a C+ show.
I think it's remembered a lot for the, and this was not my thought, but I think it's remembered a lot for the crowd, the Bizarro World stuff.
Mm-hmm.
People remembering the limo bump, and then Benoit losing to Orton. Like, those are kind of the main things that maybe stick out in your head.
Right.
But yeah, to me, Kurt Eddie match of the night carries the show, and it definitely better than I remembered.
Yeah. No, I highly recommend PTB Nation. If you have the network or if you have the DVD, throw it in or pop it on and see if you have a change of opinion of it. It's not great. It's still a C+ show, but I think many people think it's maybe a D+ show, which it's really not that bad. But it's, again, it's one of those ones where, oh, I remember that show. It kind of sucked. And you're like, but you know, take a look. It's Eddie Kurt is not surprisingly good. JBL Taker is surprisingly good. Eddie Kurt is excellent. So there is SummerSlam 2004.
All right. It puts us in the books for another couple weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time with Unforgiven 04.
Yes.
In the meantime, mm-hmm. of course, it'll be the debut of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, like we talked about earlier.
Yep.
Kevin Kelly show next week. Do not know the guest yet. We'll report that as soon as we do. Main event as well. Scott, anything early in the offings here? Actually, you have a special to announce, right?
Yes, I'm gonna make the announcement. I was gonna just put it up, but I think I'll make a surprise. This week is a special edition of the main event. The reason it is a special edition, it will be numbered. That way, finally, main event and Kevin Kelly can go back to being even. About a year and a half ago, JR, you and I did a here on the Place Be podcast. I believe it was episode almost 100 episodes ago. I think it was like 263 or 264. You and I did a pay-per-view draft where we did 40 slots and we picked, you know, we had different slots for different types of shows, manias, SummerSlams, etc. And I said to myself, I thought it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And I thought to myself, man, I really need to geek this thing up and let me find like the perfect three guys. And I would be the moderator. I wouldn't draft. And make the rounds a little smaller and do another ultimate pay-per-view draft. So this coming week, it'll probably be up Thursday night. This week on the main event, I shall announce the three gentlemen right now. Graham Cawthon, Chad Campbell, and Greg Phillips will be drafting a pay-per-view roster. Tell me that wouldn't be mind-blowing, JR. Those three guys digging deep and coming up with a roster of their own. So this week, special edition of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
We will be having a special pay-per-view draft edition. I think it went over well the other week with our the roster draft when it was Ben and Brad Stutz and Reish. So we're going to do three guys who know their shows big time. And let's see what happens. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yep. Really looking forward to checking that out, hearing that. So be sure to tune in mm-hmm. later this week for that show and everything else Place to Be Nation related. So for my PIC, Scott, I will see you on Friday night.
Yes, indeed.
The rest of the world will see you in a couple weeks. We are out. We'll see you at Unforgiven.
Definitely horrible bosses.
You gonna bring Snuggles with you?
Ponderous. I don't know if Basil and Snuggles meet.
Yes.
May not end well.
Eat leftover wings.
Horrible bosses too. Make it snappy.
straighten my new head. We wouldn't.